Communiversity catalog is published 3 times a year, and reading it is a mind-bending experience. Every issue is filled with course titles and descriptions that stretch the imagination. Today, we'll meet the instructors who have created a few fall courses and hear about their very specific areas of expertise. Sea shanty singing, getting through life transitions with help from horses, and what to do to connect with your inner librarian. I'm Gina Kaufman. Today's Central Standard is all about the value of the people's knowledge. Plus, it's sure been a heck of a season for the Royals. Hasn't it, baseball fans? We'll have that and more after this news. Communiversity is an open forum for people in the community to teach classes about the subjects that inspire them. It's a 43-year tradition in Kansas City, and today we'll meet the instructors behind these 3 classes, Sea Shanty Singing, So You Want to Be a Librarian, and Let Horses Help You with Your Life Transition. That last one, with the horses, is the first Communiversity class in our roundup. I'm here with the instructors, Kathy Cowger and Bonnie E. Benson. So, Bonnie, what's the idea behind this course? How does it work?
Well, this is a chance for people to come out and experience some learning about themselves by an interaction with horses, and it's about dealing with some kind of life transition, any kind of life transition.
Why horses?
Well, horses are herd animals, for one, so they build relationships with other horses in the herd, and in that process they build a big sensitivity to each other, and that transfers to us. So when we are out there in the arena with them, their behavior is in response to us, and so their behavior can give us a lot of information about ourselves.
Kathy, can you tell me a little bit about how the course works, just practically? Set the scene for me a little bit.
Well, when you first come out, we generally just have a time where you get to observe the horses in usually an arena. Then they're just moving around at liberty. And start making some impressions about what the horses are like, their personalities. We might start building metaphor for what this horse might represent in their own life.
Explain that a little bit, horse as metaphor.
Well, the whole reason why we do this is to build metaphor for what is going on in our own lives, is playing out in the arena with the horses, because they can kind of mirror what's going on with us.
Have you ever had someone, Bonnie, I'll ask you this question, who has arrived and been actually intimidated by the horse and had trouble sort of embracing this horse as a positive representation of succeeding through a life transition?
We've had people come out with every kind of background, from being terrified of horses to being very familiar with horses, perhaps to even having horses of their own. It doesn't matter what your horse experience is. People who are terrified of horses still get to benefit, because they get to experience learning something about themselves in the context of working with the horses. And typically they will end up deciding that horses are much less scary than what they thought.
This topic is kind of esoteric, but in a really intriguing way. And I'm wondering how it is that you actually came up with this idea, to combine interest in horses with making life transitions, and to open that up to the community.
Well, Kathy and I are certified to provide equine-assisted growth and learning experiences. Those experiences can apply in a variety of domains. We just thought it would be interesting to do something about life transitions. Originally, we'd thought of it in terms of that transition from high school to college, or high school to post-high school. And then we realized that it just applies regardless of the transition.
So did you originally start it with teenagers going through that particular high school to college transition?
That was our first idea of it, yes, and our first application, actually.
How did it work for that age group?
They love it.
Can you maybe talk a little bit about what you witness in people as they progress through this program? Maybe a story or something?
Well, when people start out, typically they don't really have a good idea of what they are about to experience, because we set up an interaction that they're going to have with the horses, and it's not going to be an interaction that they think of. They don't ride horses at all in our program, and we're going to ask them to do something that is going to call upon their imagination, creativity, problem-solving skills, those kinds of things. And out of that, afterwards, they will talk about awareness of what skills they did use to accomplish the task that we set for them, what their strengths were, what came out of it, and what the horse's behavior meant to them.
You say people don't ride horses. What is it they do with the horses?
We set up experiences with the horses that are ground-based, meaning nobody gets on a horse. We might, for example, decide that we're going to set up a jump, and they might have to move the horse over the jump.
Well, Kathy Cowger and Bonnie Benson, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. They teach Let Horses Help You with Your Life Transition on October 4th and November 1st. Kathy, Bonnie, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And we're back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this morning's Central Standard is a smorgasbord of Communiversity course offerings. Later in the show, we'll hear from the guy who planned Kansas City's World Series Victory Parade in 1985. He still works for the city, and he'll share his perspective on the first postseason Royals game in 29 years. Don't miss that. But first, let's turn to Kathy Peters, who teaches a Communiversity course called Sea Shanty Singing. Hi, Kathy.
Good morning. I'm so glad to be here.
Thanks for being here. Well, what is sea shanty singing for those who don't know? And tell us a little about how you became interested in it.
Well, I'll start with what a sea shanty is. A sea shanty is a work song. You may have seen movies like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, where you see the chain gang doing something in rhythm as they hit rocks. A sea shanty is a way to do something in rhythm so that you can do the work on a big sailing ship. For example, let's say you have to haul up the anchor. It's big.
Yes.
What are you going to do?
That sounds hard.
It is. You're going to walk around and you're going to sing something that you can pull on with a stroke. Or let's say that you have to get those sails up and down. You might do a halyard shanty, which is something where you can rhythmically pull on the rope to raise or lower the sails.
How did these songs originate? Is it around the world that these are sung?
Yes and no. The days where they did these songs on sailing ships, pretty much gone. No longer do people actually do that. Often it's done by machines these days. But people wanted to keep the music alive. It was really prominent for about 150 years in the golden ages of sail. But people still sing them.
How did you become familiar with this?
Years ago, I started going to the Sea Music Festival in Mystic Seaport, Connecticut, with my late husband. Some friends of ours had said, oh, you have to go. And once we went, we said, oh, we had to go, because people sit around and they listen to people sing sea songs and they sing sea shanties. And it's not just the work music. It's also the songs that people might have composed, or the popular songs of the time that folks, the sailors, might have sung when they were off duty. So we listened to all of that, and every evening there would be a chance to go across the street to the old German hall and drink beer, and somebody would lead a sea shanty and everybody would join in on the chorus. And I said, what fun.
That does sound fun. So can I request a demonstration for our listeners?
Absolutely. I've got one that I'll just sing one bit of, and then there's one that you're going to do with me. One that everybody probably knows is Blow the Man Down. And that was done as something about the black ball line, where people are competing on what particular line that they worked on. So someone would say, and you might know this, so you can sing along if you like to, as I was a-walking down Paradise Street, to me way, hey, blow the man down, a fat Irish bobby I chanced for to meet, give me some time to blow the man down.
You have a nice voice for that.
I was a grade school music teacher for a early part of my life.
Now, you just mentioned that I was going to participate in the next one, and I want to give our listeners a disclaimer. I am doing this to be a good sport for everyone. I just want you people to know I have no delusions about my singing voice. I feel the need to establish that, but let's do it.
You feel like a worker bee, so you're going to sing as a worker bee. This next shanty is one about Napoleon Bonaparte. The sea shanties were in part at the time of the Napoleonic Wars. So the sailors sang about Napoleon or Boney. So after the first line, there'll be a response, and after the second line, there'll be a response. So pretend you're pulling on a rope.
Okay.
Okay. Boney was a warrior, way hi-ya. That's your part. Way hi-ya. A warrior and a terrier, Jean-Francois. So just that way hi-ya and okay. Jean-Francois.
Will you point to me so I know when it's time to go?
I will.
Okay.
We'll start again. Boney was a warrior, way hi-ya. A warrior and a terrier, Jean-Francois.
Okay.
Boney fought the Prussians, way hi-ya. Then he fought the Russians, Jean-Francois. Boney went to Moscow, way hi-ya. Across the Alps in frost and snow, Jean-Francois.
Oh, I feel so accomplished now and like I could lift an anchor.
Exactly.
Which is another form of delusion that I won't get into. But have you taught this course before on sea shanty singing?
I have. I taught it last fall and also last spring. And there was usually a dozen or so of us that would get together. Someone would lead the songs or we would sing along with something who had recorded it. And it was great fun. So I encourage people to come out. I teach it on Tuesday night, October 14th.
And so when you've taught the course before, have you had a good turnout?
Oh, usually about 10 to 12 people will show up.
What's been your experience of what people enjoy about it and how they respond to the experience?
I think they like a couple of things. They like learning about the time period where the sea shanties existed, and they also like to sing. They like to keep the songs alive.
We don't have a lot of opportunities for, like, sing-alongs in our culture anymore. I mean, a lot of music is experienced as performance with someone on a stage and then the audience being passive. Do you think that Do you think that that's something that is appealing to people? Do you think that experience of singing along is important?
Well, I have to tell you, I am a folk DJ on KKFI. I go to Winfield regularly, and I produce some folk concerts. And we encourage our audience to sing along. We always say that part of the concert should be singing along. And most people who work in the folk Americana and roots area, they expect people to sing along at least once. So I think it's an important thing, and I think it's good for the young people to say, hey, I can sing, and I should sing along.
Central Standard is back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and joining me now is Chris LeBeau. She's a librarian, and she believes that other people could be librarians, too. Maybe even should be librarians, too. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Thank you for having me. And I'll tell you right up front, I don't sing.
That really usually makes two of us.
Okay.
The title of your Communiversity class is So You Want to Be a Librarian, with a question mark at the end. So maybe I should have said, So You Want to Be a Librarian? Tell me about the class. What's the idea behind it?
Well, the idea behind the class is it's really career exploration. And we find a lot of people have this kind of secret, hidden inner librarian in them.
What does that mean?
Yeah. A lot of people have experienced libraries as children. And as they go out into the workplace and they realize after 5-10 years being a programmer that there's got to be more to life. And I think the service angle, certainly the love of books, the love of reading, grabs them, and they come in to learn about what is involved with libraries. What do you do as a librarian? You know, what's the training for librarians? So those are the things we cover, and the core values and trends in librarianship. Where is the profession going? What are the current hot issues of the day? And so we have a good 2 hours discussing all this.
So you've had the experience that, in fact, a lot of people do want to be librarians and don't know how to go about doing it.
Correct, yeah.
And why do you think that is?
Well, again, librarianship often isn't the first choice career. People don't tend to think of it as their, you know, passion. It's nice to read books, but, you know, what do you do? I think they just don't understand what you do. So, yeah, like I said, a lot of people come to us sometimes refugees from the classroom. They've been teaching, and they want to get out of the classroom, and they want to stay in education because there is certainly an educational aspect to what we do.
You are a librarian. You're a business librarian for UMKC.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems to me that just by the very fact of you teaching a course like this that's open to anyone in the community and doing it year after year, that you must consider it important for other people to become librarians, for more people to be librarians. Why is that? Why does it matter?
I think just like in schools, I think we want the best and brightest people being librarians. There's an awful lot we need to deal with. We have a huge digital divide in this country. We have huge access issues, intellectual freedom issues. We need good people. Our core value is really supporting democracy and democratic traditions.
How does a library do that?
Well, by providing free access to everybody to all the information they would want. And many people say, well, it's all on the internet. And true, there's a wealth of information on the internet. I use Google probably 30 times a day myself, but I know when not to use it. And we have a lot of great databases, everything from databases that help kids with homework to very sophisticated financial databases for the business person. So there's just a richness of resource out there for people. And we need good people to bring it to them.
How has your rate of return been as far as people becoming librarians after taking the class?
You know, that's a good question. I would say it's maybe 30%.
Wow, that is high.
Well, one of my best success stories was somebody who worked for Walgreens who came in and took the class. And she said, you know, I always loved libraries as a kid. I'm kind of tired of putting pills in bottles. So she went out the next day and enrolled in the master's program at MU. And she's now a medical librarian for UMKC. And she does rounds with doctors. She's the information specialist for the doctors and the interns and residents. So
anyone who's been to a library has encountered a librarian, and a lot of people have an idea in their minds of what a librarian is. If you were to watch Ghostbusters, for example, to get that idea, though, it would be sort of a stern woman with the tightly pulled bun on her head and glasses and telling people to be quiet, shushing people. What is the reality of being a librarian? What does a librarian do exactly?
Well, shushing 101, of course, a required class in our curriculum. But libraries are little cities, and they have everything from the front and in the trenches, you know, librarians that service the public and do readers advisory and help them find information. Librarians love finding stuff. They love sleuthing. There are also the back end people that you don't see, the people that do the acquisitions, the licensing of all our electronic resources. Everything we buy today comes with a license, so we need people expert in negotiating and navigating licenses. There are people who still have to maintain the physical stacks. We need programmers, web developers, IT people, emerging technologies people, copyright people, scholarly communications. So it's endless. We are a little city of tasks and functions.
Chris, you mentioned that librarian isn't necessarily the first thing people think about when they're envisioning their careers, and that it's certainly like at the age where you're originally taking on that project, maybe you haven't reached a place of maturity to realize that the library is the place for you. How did you come to being a librarian?
Well, like many librarians, I fell into it. I was helping my husband through graduate school at Penn State, and the only job I could find in town was at Penn State University Library. So I got into it, and I loved the culture, and there were wonderful role models there. And I thought, hey, I can make a career at this. This works for me, and it's working for a lot of people.
When you teach this course and people come and show up and want to think about becoming librarians, what would you predict that some of the biggest issues they're going to tackle as maybe a next generation of librarians? What do you predict those will be?
Yeah, I think some of the issues are, again, the digital divide. Dealing with that, we see teenagers wandering around their parking lots at night trying to pick up free Wi-Fi so they can do their homework. Patron-driven acquisition is where we let the patrons actually select the titles that the library will have. Digital preservation of our cultural heritage is huge.
Data, why do we need to preserve that stuff digitally if it's already preserved in some other format?
Because when you put it on the web, the whole world can read it. And when it's sitting buried, in the fourth floor of some library, it's not accessible to everybody. And we want it there for the world to be able to enjoy and to learn from.
What do you think is the most unexpected part of being a librarian in your experience?
Ooh, the intellectual challenge of it. I get up every day and love to go to work.
Chris Lebeau is a business librarian at UMKC, and she teaches So You Want to Be a Librarian through Communiversity on October 16th.